I'm John Batchelor with Professor Richard Epstein. He's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, and he is examining in an essay for the Hoover Institution's Defining Ideas a most recent case that the ink is still wet, from the Supreme Court, the Justice Roberts Supreme Court, the case Cedar Point versus Hasid. This is the extremely complicated matter of takings, the takings clause in the Constitution. Richard has written a book about this that has been the centerpiece of his explications for many years, and also it informs decisions, while not quoting Richard's book, it informs decisions that are based upon all of the same cases that Richard builds his takings book upon. So we're looking at something that has remained a controversy and at the same time revelatory of our Constitution for many decades. I go now to the minority decision. It was 6-3. Strikingly, the six appointees voting for the property owner and against the California Labor Relations Board's presumption that a union could enter a private property for X number of days per year to organize. Voting for it were the six so-called conservatives on the court. This is a many-splendored adjective. I use it lightly. However, Stephen Breyer leads the three so-called liberals on the court. Again, a light use of an adjective. I'm not informed to go any farther. I note, however, that Justice Breyer uses similar cases to Richard and to Justice Roberts and to what Richard has explicated, chiefly Loretto. And if I understand Richard, and I can get lost in this, Justice Breyer's dissent turns on whether or not this was permanent and continuous use. Is that critical here? Because you've made note of that, and previous decisions were also keen about the timeline.
Yes, and in fact, that's exactly what the letter that was sent by Ms. Preloger said. What she said is this is not a Loretto case because it's only temporary and limited in nature. Therefore, what happens has to be governed by the Penn Central balancing test. And when you balance, as I mentioned before, it turns out that a union interest is now equated with a public interest, and so that you're going to treat the regulation as though it were valid. And what our friend Brian does is he goes through all the particular cases and around the decision and comes up with the conclusion that, by God, Loretto was narrowly construed until this particular situation. Penn Central was broadly construed. All of the efforts on the part of the Justice Marshall in the Loretto case, the sort of limited to scopes, the permanent boxes on roofs to exempt out the rent control statutes, for example, were ignored in that case. And so he's basically saying this is stare decisis. My view about it is on the stare decisis question, he's correct. My other view about it is I think that Loretto was right on its particular case but was wrong in general, that by and large it turns out that regulatory takings and physical takings ought to be subject to a uniform rule. So let me just give you a one-sentence explanation. If you go to Penn Central, the question is whether or not you could condemn the air rights over the Grand Central Terminal and not pay anything in order to preserve the views up and down Park Avenue. Now, how do you think of this? Well, they said it's a mere restriction on use, but if you look at New York law, this is a taking of air rights, and that's an interest in property that you can build on, that you can mortgage, that you can sell, that you can lease, that you can devise. So why is it that somehow or other you get per se protection on the ground and you get no protection at all in the air? Justice Brennan's decision in the Penn Central case is one of the sloppiest opinions ever written. It has enormous influence, and as best I can tell, it's completely wrong. And so here's the issue you put to you. Suppose what happens is the state of New York wants to not only condemn the air rights from the Penn Central company, but wants to build the tower itself. Surely they would have to pay. Now they're saying, we don't want to build a tower. We don't want you to build a tower. That's just taking a restrictive covenant on land, which restricts the way somebody uses. Easements, which enter land, and servitudes, which restrict the use of current owners, restrictive covenants, are all servitudes. They should be all protected in the same way. But that's never been the case under the Supreme Court rule. Entries by easements in the Nolan case have been held to be continuous because the public can use it at any time, even though at every time they don't use it. But permanent restrictions on what you could do with your property in order to benefit the rest of the world, if done by a private party, would be prohibited unless compensated, indeed voluntarily made. And in this case, you get a walk. And so this disjunction between the public and the private law has made all of modern takings law essentially intellectually bankrupt because of the effort to insulate the entire New Deal regulatory state by saying it's a mere regulation rather than a taking of property.
Richard, I want to go to the New Deal because Justice Black rendered a decision in 1960, you cite in your paper, that seems logical to as a foundation for all of these cases, arguments, Armstrong versus the United States. And you quote, the Fifth Amendment's guarantee that private property shall not be taken for a public use without just compensation was designed to bar government from forcing some people alone to bear public burdens, which, in all fairness and justice, should be borne by the public as a whole. End quote. Richard, for an amateur such as myself, that seems definitive, is it not?
Well, this is, again, the distinction. My view is you took the air rights over the Penn Central from the Penn Central Company to benefit the public at whole, and why should they have to bear the entire cost? It turned out the interest in the Armstrong case was that somebody had repaired a ship. He had not been paid by his contractor. Under private law, he has a lien on the property for his goods in question, since no lien waiver was procured. And the way the government dissolved the lien was they sailed the boats into international waters, and so this guy was left holding the bag. And what Black said, wait a second, these guys are fixing a boat. This is for the U.S. Navy. He's not getting 10% of the benefit. He's just another citizen. Pay him his lien so that the cost of maintaining the Navy should be borne by the public. The cost of maintaining beauty over private property should be borne by the public. And Justice Brennan, one of the most intellectually disreputable moves, said, oh, no, there's only ad hoc inquiries that we have here. There's no really fixed rule. So the splendid statement of Justice Black is tossed into the wastebasket, and you come up with a balancing test, which essentially allowed this to go forward. Now, mind you, unlike the labor case, nobody wants to question that deciding to open up the views in down Park Avenue is a public use. It surely is. But the labor case, where you're trying to help unions and hurt the public at large by raising the price of goods, doesn't seem to me to be exactly the same case at all. So the public use issue, which I didn't talk about in my column, is going to come roaring back again in these particular cases because some of these cases are partisan ventures. Others are not. Penn Central is not a partisan venture, so take and pay. Unions are a partisan venture, so they don't take and they can't. Then they don't have to pay. That's the way I would want to do this. But American labor law essentially rests upon several propositions. One is there's no freedom of contract, i.e. a refusal to deal in a competitive market. Two, limited amounts of trespasses for organization are going to be put into place. Three, you can disrupt all private contracts made by workers prior to the time at which this is done. So it's a completely regulatory regime. And so what happens is you have to take every constitutional doctrine and twist it so as to allow this to go forward. They've done this, and now what's happened is all these special constitutional doctrines are going to be called into question because Justice Roberts announces a very general principle in which standard property principles and standard takings principles are applied, and this is a tectonic clash. This is not the last word on this particular case. I'm strongly in favor of this decision as a matter of first principle, but I think it would be just disingenuous to assume that you didn't break a lot of china to get there because all the earlier body of takings law was carefully constructed by people like Justice Marshall to make sure that the regulatory state was not going to be inhibited by the takings clause. Justice Brennan was very much of that opinion. And now, in effect, we have a Chief Justice who ironically says, I believe in Penn Central, in many other cases, who has basically taken a sledgehammer. And we will see just how much of the edifice he's managed to
Professor
break.
Richard Epstein, and I read from Justice Roberts' decision for the majority. The upshot of this line of precedent is that government-authorized invasions of property, whether by plane, boat, cable, or beachcomber, are physical takings requiring just compensation, end quote. Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, a senior fellow, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, writing at Defining Ideas. This is the CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bausch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.